This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk.
What is going on up here?
I never know, man.
Unbiased.
Shut your mouth.
Uncompromised sports talk without the sugarcoating.
I hope you're happy. You wasted everyone's life for 30 seconds.
Isaac Ropp and Jason Sakanik.
Now shut up and let me do my job.
The best in sports coverage.
This is going to be great.
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back. It's hour two of our sports show.
Hey, shut up.
With Ropp and Souk, hello. We're going to move on to baseball.
Yes.
Do you like baseball?
I do like baseball.
Your Mets won today.
Especially when the Mets
are
no longer crappy.
Dude, they've won 7 in a row.
I know. Break them up. And DeGrom's been hurt.
Well, he just got hurt. Well, but
I understand.
In fairness, your boy Frankie Lindor.
Yeah,
he got a hit today.
He's hitting 194 now. He's been
a
heater.
No.
He's over 200.
202.
Oh, he's
202.
Back, baby.
Look at that.
He's the new Mendoza.
Well, in the bullpen, apparently Edwin Diaz no longer has his head up his arse. Yeah. I mean, this is kind of more along
they're
the lines
team.
Of what Mets fan were expecting this year.
Yeah, they're a good team.
Yeah.
I'm going to bust out of it. Just wait.
First place, man.
Yeah, 18 and 13, man.
You know what makes me even, I'm not sure which I'm more happy about, the Mets being in first place or the Nationals being in last place.
Oh, I thought you were saying the Braves are under 500.
Well, that makes
me happy.
Because
you hate the Braves.
I do hate the Braves, but,
yeah, the Nationals are.
The old hate for the Braves has kind of been replaced. I don't mind the new Braves as much. I think Freddie Freeman and Acuna Jr., there's some likable.
Chipper Jones.
Larry, please. I do think I hate the Nationals now more than I do the Braves, but yeah, they suck.
All right. Well, by the way, one note before we get to the story, the Mariners called up Logan Gilbert today.
Mm-hmm.
He is a stud. He's their top pitching prospect.
Okay. And Kelnick makes his debut tomorrow.
So does this guy. So this guy Gilbert's going to pitch tomorrow.
He's gonna pitch.
So this is a big moment for the Mariners, is they have called up their top two prospects, pitcher and hitter, and they're both going to be in there for their major league debuts tomorrow against Cleveland. And
the bigger,
you know, it's a big.
The bigger Souk will be in attendance.
No, see that he's going to love that.
He's driving up for it.
Good, yeah. Because Gilbert is the real deal. He was the number one pick, not overall, but their first round pick of 2018, and he's been filthy at every level. He's really good. They say he has 4 pitches, and they're already calling him up. So it's kind of a new era with the Mariners, because they got Rodriguez following probably later in the year, maybe next year.
And he's hitting real well. He almost had the cycle the other day.
Dude, they all this losing
maybe
might pay off.
Well, I mean, and they – now, their offense is dreadful. Like, their run differential is like negative 20. But, I mean, they're 500. They're hanging around. I think they're only a game or two back of the Astros.
So this story about Drew Robinson is nuts.
Yes. I honestly can't recall seeing, pun intended there, seeing anything like this. You lose an eye?
Okay, so this story, he is a minor league baseball player.
Yeah.
And he is 29 years old. He was born in Vegas. He was drafted by the Rangers in the 4th round in 2010. And he began his professional career that season. He's bounced around, struggled a bit. Long story short, this guy at the age of 28, Drew Robinson is his name, tries to kill himself.
Yeah.
He said that he was bipolar, he was depressed, he didn't know how to talk about it with anyone and his parents, and so he had a gun, he was at his house, he had a gun, he put it to his head,
pulled the trigger.
And he pulled the trigger. He said that was, he thought at the time that was the best way to fix this. He was down in the dump. So dude wakes up 12 to 18 hours later in his house after shooting himself. He has no right eye. He has blown out his right eye. He has a hole in his head. Mm-hmm. There's blood everywhere, as you can imagine. But he's fine. And he goes and takes a shower. He cleans the house because he doesn't want his parents to see that. And he looks at the gun and he has a fork in the road. He says to himself, I gotta finish this.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He calls 911 and he does not kill himself.
Nope.
Fast forward 1 year later, this guy is now with the Sacramento River Cats, who are the affiliate of the Giants. I think AAA, right?
I believe this is AAA.
And
so the highest level you can get.
Yeah, because he signed a minor league contract a couple years ago with the Giants. So he was with the Giants this whole time. He re-signed in November of last year. And he is now with the Sacramento River Cats, and he is trying to make a comeback. And just the other night, he hit a home run. He does not have an eye.
No. Well, he's got a fake one now, but, you know.
Well, but but it's fake.
I know.
I'm
just saying, like, when you look at photos of him, it looks good. Like, it's, you know.
Dude. He is playing baseball.
One eye.
Hitting close to big league pitching with one eye.
I don't even know how that's possible. Like, you would think from a depth perception standpoint, right? That would.
Right. Because don't you lose your depth perception?
That would look now.
And he's a lefty.
I haven't lost an eye before, but I would assume that that's what you always hear is that when when you don't have an eye or you lose one, the peripheral vision and then the depth perception is gone.
So he's a lefty and he lost his right eye.
Yeah.
So think about that.
That's the saving grace, though, you would assume.
Is that what it is?
Because if you're left-handed and you have your left eye that's still there, that's the one that you would probably need.
For depth?
I was going to say from more of a peripheral standpoint. I mean, I know you turn your head a little bit, but I would assume that being a left-handed batter, you would want the left as opposed to the right.
I've never thought about this. I have no idea.
Because the right eye, the periph is going to be behind you, obviously, and you don't need to see that. You would need to see better forward. So I think.
Well, it's the opposite eye, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're a lefty, the right eye is more important.
Well, he lost his right eye.
No. If you're lefty. Oh.
Your right eye is facing the mound.
Oh, yeah. So I
don't know.
I'm flipping that. Yeah, I would think that would be more challenging.
If you're righty, you look this way to the left. Your left eye is facing forward.
Yeah, we're all doing the one eye thing right now, right? We're all pretending to be a lefty batter and we're closing our right eye.
Yeah, I would think that this is
that would be harder.
I think this would be way harder. I think it would be more beneficial if you had your right eye being a left-hander,
dude.
Because think about it, your head is not turned when you're hitting. It's not, it's turned, but you're not facing the pitcher. Your peripheral vision is still very much coming into play. The whole thing is insane. It's absolutely insane that he's at this point. And it's not that long.
No, it was a year. Right?
When I first saw this, I was like, because the headline that I saw was, hits first home run since suicide attempt, one-eyed ball player. I was thinking this was going to be one of those like 4 or 5 years ago. No, it was a year ago. Oh, my God. The fact that he's even in a mental state to be back trying this.
He also lost his taste and smell. He can't taste anything. He can't smell anything.
Well, you know.
Guy's name's Drew Robinson.
And he is talking, openly, obviously, about, the mental health struggles and, and trying to make that aware. And I think, we might be over. Maybe it was last month Mental Health Awareness Month, or is it this one?
I don't know.
Because I've seen some stuff kind of bouncing around. I know Kevin.
I should know that.
Kevin Love's been, talking about some of this stuff. But have you ever watched the documentary, The Bridge, about the people in San Francisco?
Yeah.
They talk about in that documentary that it is almost universal. The people that fail in their suicide attempt are grateful that they failed. And there are a lot of people that survive that, or people that have jumped down and, you know, they're in a net or whatever, that the moment their feet leaves the bridge, or the moment that you kick the chair out, there's that instant kind of regret of, oh my God, what did I just do? And this guy was given the ultimate second chance, because most of the time when you use the gun, I mean, chances are you're not getting a second opportunity.
Somebody said him hitting bombs with one eye in the minor leagues is more impressive than Jim Abbott pitching years in the show with one arm. You think that's true?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Well, I think so too.
If he makes the bigs, because, you know, Abbott, it only affected the ability to field, and you know,
but he figured out a way to switch
the glove, and he actually was a pretty decent fielder. But this, I just can't imagine the challenge behind this.
So he hit a home run, but, you know, is he good? Like, you have to wonder, like, is this really, though, where the story ends? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, come on, he has one eye. Are you telling me the guy's going to make the big leagues with one eye?
I don't know.
You have to think that it just will hold him back, but.
It's possible.
Hitting a home run.
But even that, even if you just, you know, he flames out in another year or two.
It's still an amazing story.
And more importantly, hopefully the kid. Only a kid, the young man, or, you know, man, whatever, you know, he's 29.
I'd call him a man.
Man, let's just hope that this, whatever this is, you know, baseball or non-baseball, that this leads to a better life. It leads to a happy life.
Texter in saying that he actually does need, as a lefty, his left eye, because that's closer to the plate in the strike zone. So that gives you the depth perception.
Oh,
okay.
Because it's closer to the plate.
Okay.
And I love the people that are like, you dumbasses ever heard of the dominant eye? I'm as if we're sitting here being like, yes, I've been studying what it means to be a one-eyed baseball player.
Why so harsh?
I know. I just love the people that are so angry. Like, how dare you not know?
So this year at Sacramento, he's had 18 plate appearances. He's hitting .188 with the one home run.
Okay. So, to your point,
he's struggling a bit.
Maybe this is, you know, maybe his career
batting average in the majors is .202. He does have 223 major league at bats.
Okay.
Did not fare very well. And he's played overseas. He hit .201. All levels, all in 11 seasons. He's a .246 hitter.
So it's you're.
Yeah. It's an uphill battle.
He was never able to do it before. So,
but he was a fourth rounder.
Yeah.
So a lot of talent there.
But it sounds like this probably is where it ends. But it's a great story. Maybe he can be be a public speaker, inspiration about what he's been through, and, you know, try to help some people out.
Now, if he has success, are players going to start going up there with eye patches?
This is the key. It's the new fad.
He's unlocked the. He's unlocked the secret.
This is the key all along, is to just been a one-eyed guy.
Crazy story.
It is. And I can't imagine, one, I've never been in that state where I've been, you know, suicidal. I mean, I think everyone's been in a funk before. I've never thought about ending it. But I don't, you imagine being at that point to where you go through it, that you pull the trigger and then you wake up.
Yeah.
And you're just like,
no, I can't.
I'm going to go take a shower and
weird.
I don't have an eye here. And that just has to be the most surreal thing that you could possibly go through, is you pull the trigger and then you wake up.
And he calls 911.
Yeah. As opposed to, like you said, well, I guess you only have two choices at that point, right? You finish it or, although at that point, are you terrified that you're going to screw it up again?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what goes through one's mind at that point. Crazy. All right. Well, one other baseball note coming up next.
Someone said, how did the Pirates not sign this guy? Look, I know that's inappropriate, but that's phenomenal. I said, come on, he could dominate that jersey. Look.
Quality.
Wow.
That's quality content.
You
I'm
went
sorry,
there, and it was a bold move to go there, and I appreciate it.
All right. It's 4:21 on the Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Follow up to the Drew Robinson story. On another Giants note, Did you see that Jeff Passan, who's kind of the go-to baseball scribe now?
Yeah.
He's kind of taken over the Jason Stark, Tim Kirkjian.
Kind of the main.
Well, it used to be Peter Gammons.
Yeah.
He's the newsbreaker now.
Yeah, he's like the Schefter.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was talking about the surprise team in baseball, and he claims that they are going nowhere. And he is talking about the San Francisco Giants.
Ah.
He wrote the other day, he called them a burgeoning monster.
That's quite a statement.
Well, it is, because the Giants, I don't think anybody expected the Giants to be this good. They are leading that division over the Padres, over the Dodgers.
And they have like a plus 30, 31 run differential too. It's not a fluke.
They're good. Yeah. Their pitching is outstanding. And they have a bunch of guys from other teams. Like it's not really, I don't think there's anybody that's like a young guy that they drafted. I may be wrong about that, but like Kevin Gausman from the O's, Alex Wood, remember him from the Dodgers.
The
Reds guy, Di Sclafani or whatever. I don't know how you pronounce it, but
they
that
got
guy.
What, Cueto still?
Oh, Johnny Cueto's
Johnny
still
Cueto.
There. That's
but,
right.
But he wasn't theirs. I mean, they dealt, because he was like, what, Kansas City and Cincinnati? I don't know how
No,
he
Kansas City got him from the Giants, right?
Where did he? He's bounced.
He was a trade deadline guy.
Yeah,
for
he's
Casey.
Bounced around a little bit.
He's been with the Giants for a little while.
Yeah.
Though.
But anyway, Passan said, they're not better than the Dodgers or the Padres. Let's get that out of the way. But have they done a phenomenal job of building a rotation essentially from scratch? Yes, they have. Have their hitters underperformed, leaving them room to improve? Indeed. Have they got a phenomenally deep farm system the industry believes might be among the game's five best? Yes. Are they a place where pitchers want to go? Absolutely. So while the Giants might be outplaying their talent level and won't end up winning the NL West, they are a burgeoning monster with excellent management, development, and a boatload of money to spend.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because their best hitter, I think, is Longoria right now. So maybe
Posey's hitting really well again.
Buster Posey all of a sudden's batting 400.
Back to being good.
Yeah.
Roids.
Their best hitter was supposed to be Mike Yastrzemski, and he started off really slow.
Yeah.
Isn't it Carl Yastrzemski?
Mutton Chop Yaz. He's like he's related, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's his.
I'm not sure if it's a great.
I think it's nephew or something.
Nephew or something. But yeah, I remember when he came up all those years ago, that was it was a big deal.
Freaking Giants.
Yeah, Posey's hitting .385 with eight dingers.
Where did that come from?
I don't know.
Dude, that guy was basically out of the league if he couldn't.
Yeah, he was done, right?
I mean, he was catching, but he couldn't hit.
Well, he can hit now.
Shh. Well.
Same thing with like J.D. Martinez on the Red Sox. He was
right.
Awful
yes.
last now, year, and now he's hitting like .380.
Steroids.
Well,
it is fun. Look,
that used to be the.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not. I was just joking there about Posey and Martinez. But look, back in the day when Poppy had this, Big Poppy did this, right? And you were cooked, and you came back, or Pudge, or someone. We all were like, oh yeah, that career resurgence at 32, wink, wink. But now we don't. And I'm asking the question of why.
I don't know why. I mean,
that's beyond the conversation at this point.
No, I just don't think we care anymore.
That's where
we only have so much capacity for our outrage. We used up our outrage tank on that.
That whole thing.
That whole thing. We were so outraged by
and
that.
And now we're just happy to see Buster Posey hitting again. We're like, yeah, go Buster.
I have no problems if J.D. Martinez is on on the sauce. I don't care.
Juice it up.
Hopefully the Royals get some of it because they need it.
Posey at .257 last year.
That's better than I thought.
Yeah.
All right, there's a little hot baseball talk. Let's get to In the News. You ready for In the News?
I'm always ready for my news.
Stunningly, Multnomah County is struggling with how to tackle the homeless problem.
Oh, what? Every time I drive around, I just think to myself, I'm like, you know what, guys? We're doing great.
In the News is next. Here's Mike.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right. We are careening toward the Hot 5 at 5. Big night in the NBA. Blazers taking on Utah. Blake Bortles has a new home. You know, a lot of good stuff. A
lot of breaking news.
Oh, and the NFL schedule, full sked, is coming out
And can I just say real quick that
the
Blue Jays, baby blue just needs to be a part of every Major League Baseball team. It's just, it's wonderful. It's the best look.
You don't think you'd get sick of it if every team had a baby blue?
It's the best look in baseball. When the Cards do it, when the Royals do it, when the Blue Jays do it. Now, I love what the Pods have going on. With
don't the Braves do it?
Yeah, the Braves have some of it. I just, well, they're playing the Braves, so they can't each do it. But the Cardinals may have the best looking one when they go with the baby blues.
Do the Phillies still do it?
Phillies still do it occasionally. The Rangers made it a part of theirs. It's just, it's an amazing look in sports when the Chargers and the NFL do it. More baby blue, man. Throw it out there. It works.
May 12, 2021, it is time for In the News. I'm your noted newsman. Today is International Receptionist Day.
Okay, go receptionist.
Well, I'm sure that's, you know, like, I don't know. Are we ever going to get a receptionist back? Like, a lot of receptionists.
Yeah, probably.
You know, are probably kaput now, well, because
eventually we will, because we'll have an office again at some point.
We have no receptionist and haven't had one for over a year.
No, there's just a sign there that says that she's out and has been out for the past 20 months.
But I think that's a changing, that's an evolving career.
I do think that in some places you will, you know, you require a receptionist. I don't. Eventually we will, because the doors are going to have to open again.
Somebody has to sort the mail.
Yes.
And hand you your tickets that you win by calling in, exactly. By being the 10th caller.
Exactly. Someone has
KGON.
Someone has to be the stopgap between the crazies and the rest of us.
It is also National Odometer Day. I don't know why the odometer has its own day, but
really?
Today is that day.
Okay. Go odometers. If you don't really think about it.
A state of emergency has been declared over the gas shortages in several U.S. states.
You seen some of the videos going on out there?
Oh, I've seen them.
Boy, it is bananas. Then you're seeing people that are filling like garbage cans.
Plastic bags.
Yeah, plastic bags with gas.
What are you doing?
What could go wrong?
It's like the toilet.
They had to release a statement that said, stop using plastic bags to fill up with gas. Look,
and I understand that there's a shortage and there's some lines. You realize that more gas is coming, right? It's like the toilet paper thing. It's going to be okay, people.
Also, if you fill up 8 canisters of gas, you're going to make the shortage worse for everyone else.
Yes, but no one cares about that much, like the toilet paper. I got to get mine.
Very selfish.
There's a video going around where this lady gets out of her car, goes over, and hawks a loogie at a guy who's sitting in his car. And by the way, she was trying to cut in line, and he cut her off and was like, no, you're getting in the back of the line. She gets out of the car, hawks a loogie in his face. What? He gets out. Goes over to her, hawks a loogie in her face. She starts throwing bows. To be fair, the guy doesn't hit her. He just kind of gives her the, like, if you're fighting a little kid, you kind of, like, you just hold him at bay. And then he takes her phone and hucks it. I mean, it's unbelievable, some of these things that are going on.
Florida, Virginia, Georgia, and North Carolina, states of emergency. The Colonial Pipeline hack. Thousands of fuel stations run dry. People are panic buying, as you pointed out.
Yeah.
Gas prices are going up. The last time average gas prices were above $2.99, which they are now, they're creeping toward that, was November of 2014.
Well, that's a long time. I do remember when...
7-year high.
I remember when gas was like $4.40 and people were losing their ass and... Boy, man, it's just, I understand that when things, you know, prices rise or, you know, there's a shortage on stuff, that's not good for anyone. But all of these things wouldn't be that big a deal if we just didn't lose our ass. As someone said here, the real shortage is on brain cells.
That's right.
What it is.
I agree with that.
The gas shortage is not what's going to screw us over. It's the shortage of brain cells. That's what's going to do it.
Well... I guess I'll leave it to you to explain how a pipeline gets hacked.
Well, I mean, everything now is just, I'm sure all of this is controlled by computers. I don't think there's one guy with like an old valve. Gummy Joe isn't there, you know, turning on the valve to bring us the gas.
Well, sure. I'm well aware that it's controlled by computers. It's the question of how does that happen? How do you let that happen? I guess the Russians are behind it.
That's what some people are saying. The Russians are the Chinese. So
it's a ransomware attack. So, yeah.
And so now there's the debate of did they pay or did they
pay the ransom?
Yeah, did they pay the ransom?
I was reading that they did not. We did not.
Well, but this is the thing. when anyone does pay the ransom, no one ever admits
to paying the ransom.
So it's up in the air. Some people were saying that it got fixed awful quick for not paying the ransom.
Joseph R. Biden, who is our new president, he says that the fuel situation will be under control soon, like within the next 24 hours.
That's a good thing. I think someone's sitting out there on their 8 bags of fuel right now, their hefty bags, and are like, damn it.
Well, they'll just leave them in their closet and forget about them.
You realize gas goes bad, too, in the hefty bags, just saying.
Well, it probably eats up the hefty bags.
Yeah.
They'll probably just try to light it on fire to get rid of it.
Probably not the smartest of things to do.
Jeez. Well, this from the Willamette Week. I was reading this today. The headline is, emotions well up in a debate over how to best help Portland's homeless. Being flush with money brings problems.
What?
Yeah, just ask Big Sook.
What?
It says, being flush with money brings problems, and city and county leaders are fighting over how to best use their share of the money that metro area voters approved last May. So, you know that they have taxed. They've raised a bunch of money.
Yeah,
to battle the homeless problem.
Ain't solving it, but yeah.
They have a $52 million annual tax, and it's mostly on high-income households.
Sure.
But they are now fighting over how, in a stunning turn of events, they don't know how to spend it.
Can I take a guess on how it's going to be spent?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Yeah, ineffective.
Ineffectively?
I had to just put one category. Right. Or if you could put foolishly, poorly.
Well, all right.
Ineffective.
You tell me.
Take your pick.
All right.
Throw an adjective out there.
Because we often wonder, what are they doing? Well, here are some ideas. Okay, here's why somebody started crying at the Multnomah County Commissioner party thing, vote office.
Yeah,
meeting. I don't know.
Conclave.
In the latest sign of a rift between advocates and business interests who worked together last year to boost the $52 million annual tax hike on high-income households, they are now fractured over how to spend it. There is a series of tense meetings of the complicated matrix of city and county agencies, metro boards, elected officials, and nonprofits. See, that's the problem right there.
It's the same thing with the trash.
We got all these interests.
We have like 9 groups that are responsible for picking up trash, so no one does it.
So dumb.
We have too many damn cooks in the kitchen.
So these are all tasked with creating a combined force to best use the money. So there's problem one.
Can we just put me in charge? Because we know I've got big ideas, bold ideas. One word.
Two visions of how
That's
to...
That's two words.
Oh, it's one. It's one word. It's a new word.
Two visions of how to spend the money have emerged. The framework that's gotten the all but official nod is tucked within a plan crafted by the city and county's Joint Office of Homeless Services. It's the plan recommended in Multnomah County Chair Deborah Kefouri's proposed budget and the one backed by most stakeholders. The bare bones of the plan for the first year include erecting alternative shelters to serve up to 200 people, long-term housing for 800, rapid rehousing for 500, rent assistance for 930 households in imminent danger of becoming homeless, and 200 extra year-round shelter beds.
That actually sounds halfway decent.
You're okay with that?
Yes.
Okay, but some elected officials have argued the plan doesn't put near enough investment into options that can shelter people immediately. Because they said only, what do they say in there? Rapid rehousing for 500. Okay? So, there is discontent. Who is this woman?
You know, I'm just saying, what would... provide immediate shelter?
What?
Boat.
Boats, plural.
Got a lot of boats sitting out there on the Willamette right now.
So Ted Wheeler says, I have some concerns that are maybe in alignment with this woman whose name I can't find, who's fighting this. I'm already getting calls from constituents who are asking why there are so many people living outside when we just passed this huge measure. Yeah. You would think that's probably what Ted Wheeler's getting calls about.
Yes.
This woman was so unhappy with the consensus plan that she crafted her own vision of how the region could erect alternative shelters with a six-month plan that includes options like pods, tent sites, and safe parking sites, though the plan's unlikely to make it into Kafouri's budget.
I am dead serious about this. We have a lot of empty land. Like, is it that much? You got $52 million. Can we take some of that and actually put up some yurts? And start actually telling people that I'm sorry, I understand that it's been on hard times, we're going to be compassionate, but you can't put up a tent wherever the hell you want in the middle of a sidewalk. You can't do it. And if you do need a place to live, we are going to provide this. And because that you are there, we can offer some services to there. We can offer some sanitation, maybe even some counseling towards it.
But see, every time they pick a piece of land for that, you get a guy who's behind it, or a woman, or whomever, a group. And they're like, this is it. We're going to do it right here. And then some other some neighborhood association comes in, or some other group comes in. It's like, no, you can't do it here.
Isn't it better than what we have right now, which is it's everywhere? So the perfect is the greatest enemy of better. I would honestly get behind anyone that just, this is like a diet, right? Whether you're doing a keto diet, whether you're doing vegetarian, whatever, an exercise program, you want to do P90X, you want to do, you know, weights, yoga, whatever. If you do a diet or you do an exercise plan and you just stick to it, you're going to see results. And so just pick something, pick a lane, get a couple smart people in a room and say, this is going to be our plan, and come hell or high water, we're going to do it.
So the woman I was looking for, her name is Sharon Myron. She's the Multnomah County Commissioner. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she goes into the latest meeting. She says, it looks like there's possibly an increase of about 350 to 400 shelter beds, plus alternative shelter beds that are accounted for in this proposed budget, with 800 units of supported housing. And that's for the people who are living outside right now. I feel that's a small number of people in the big scheme of people living unsheltered right now.
Yes.
What I'm proposing is a coordinated network of outdoor shelter sites that will provide safety, community, and basic hygiene services for people currently experiencing homelessness.
Doesn't that kind of sound like what I just was talking about?
Okay.
Common sense approach?
So she says, we have all these rungs and tiers for the long-term work that all of us agree we need to be doing, and we're kind of missing a first rung that is big enough to help transition people. Okay, so that's what she said. They come back with, we've already talked about this stuff 95 million times. These are exact quotes. And I feel like at this point, are we just going over stuff again because some people aren't happy? I have a real process issue with referring to a plan that not all of us have seen or reviewed. I don't know if we're suddenly being asked to suddenly back a random plan, or if the point is larger. Is it that just everybody's pet projects aren't listed? I actually very much agree that we need to have a really structured conversation in how we support people amidst this crisis, but it can't just be a one-off. I think that if we do this, we have to start asking people what would help them and build out from there. The answer might not be tent networks or tiny pod villages. It's more complicated than that. If we're suddenly just throwing out more proposals, where can I put my proposal together? So you see how this crap goes?
We also need to start separating between the people that want to get help and the people that don't give a rip. And I know you have to start somewhere, and I'm not saying that you try to abandon everybody, but I do think there's a difference between the people that have fallen on hard times and rent assistance, or that would take advantage of some programs to try to help them get out of their situation, and the people that don't give a rip and they're putting needles in their arms and they're doing whatever the hell they want. And I think that there needs to be a focus on helping the one group, and the others, you know, I don't know how you address that, but I think a step is to start identifying that there is a difference in those two people right now that are homeless.
So here's another woman. This is the last little bit of it where someone starts crying. Katrina Holland is the executive director of Join PDX. She says, I have a question for Commissioner Marin. With this proposal you're bringing forward, is the hope this would be an option that folks can choose, or is the hope that there would be enough built environments or alternative structures that the city would have the ability to tell people you can camp here and you cannot camp here?
Yes.
She says the hope with this is to provide people with options. It would be a continuum of options. So from safe sleep sites, if that's where people feel comfortable, to safe parking lots. I'm not coming at this from just a random, oh, I think we need to solve homelessness this way. I've never thought about this before. I haven't been out on the street. I haven't provided medical care to people on the street. I come at this as someone who's actually done some direct service, who speaks with a lot of people who are houseless and advocates. Then she starts crying. She's visibly emotional, and her voice shakes. She says, sorry, my motto is speak your mind, even if your voice shakes, and I know my voice is shaking right now. The way that we even have this conversation to me is so disrespectful. We talk about having difficult conversations. We talk about inclusion and equity and respecting people. And what I find is we actually don't have those difficult conversations because certain voices and perspectives are silenced or mocked or disregarded for whatever reason. It does not actually feel like a safe space in many ways. And in recognizing that I'm privileged, I'm an elected official, that I'm white, all of these things. And for me, it doesn't feel safe.
I can imagine
it might not feel safe for other people.
Beat my head into a wall with the safe space and the just
welcome to Portland.
God,
ladies and gentlemen,
bless America.
That right there is Portland, Oregon. Right there.
The first thing is to accept the fact that you can't help everyone. So help the ones that want to be helped and start actually saying, you know what? I understand that you're on hard times, but because you're on hard times doesn't mean you can do whatever the hell you want. Because the rest of us can't. The rest of us can't do whatever the hell they want with what we want. There's rules and things that we have to abide by. But it seems like there's a whole other group of people out there that don't. And that drives me crazy. And stop with the damn buzzwords.
All right. I've got fake rifle news.
Ooh, okay.
You like fake rifle news, Jason?
Yeah, let's do it.
Coming up next. And are your kids cheating in school? It is 4:53 on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
And it's Tech says that segment is exactly why we won't be seeing Major League Baseball to Portland anytime soon. That is the battle they fight.
Probably an element to that.
That's right. A couple of other stories here before we wrap up on In the News here on The Fan. This is May 12th. Are your kids cheating in school? A big expose in the Wall Street Journal today about this. Because kids are home and access to the internet and on Zoom and all that crap.
Yeah.
They're all a bunch of cheating bastards.
Well, I would certainly hope so.
And there's websites offering services to do their homework for them. So schools have seen a surge in academic dishonesty.
Yeah, that, I mean, look, when you were a kid and they did the, hey, here's a take-home test, don't use your book, did you ever not?
No, of course.
Yeah.
The real question is, did you ever cheat on a test?
Yes.
And the answer to me, for me, is also yes.
Yeah.
And I was caught.
Were you?
Yes. And I remember the shame glaze look from my professor whose name I can't remember, but I can picture him. He caught me and he was like, of all people, you.
Yeah.
I did not expect you.
I shamed you.
It made me feel so terrible.
Yeah. Well, you probably should. You're a terrible person.
Anyway, I got a great grade.
No. Oh, I mean, I just kind of assume that that's just kind of goes with the territory. And I think teachers know it as well.
I got shamed by a TA in college for it. Because we were taking a test and she was like grading like three or four seats down from me. And I guess she caught that I had like crossed off some answers and from what I had seen on her page that she was grading. And she emailed me and she was like, you're lucky that I'm not going to tell the professor about this, but you should make it less obvious if you're going to cheat. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. I feel terrible now. But I also needed to pass this class.
But as a kid, your first instinct is, oh, I'm not cheating.
Yeah, really.
No, I didn't think that. My first thought was, oh, crap, she saw.
Well, most kids. Mike's special.
Yeah.
Very special, as we know. Most kids are like, what? I'm not cheating. Mm. I didn't, that wasn't me. It's hey. It's right there on your hand. You wrote it on your... You know, we had the old school ways, like write it on your shoe or write something on your hand.
I had a kid in college. We were in a class. It was a history class, like anthropology. And you had to write two papers, you know, kind of like the bigger papers. And he asked me if he could have mine. And I was like, dude, you're not turning in my first... He goes, dude, it's a big class. I'll change it up. No big deal. So I was like, fine. I'm like, change a bunch of stuff. So I gave him my first paper. And the idiot printed it out, the whole thing, and turned it in. Guess what was on the stupid paper?
Nah.
My name. He changed nothing. He changed absolutely nothing to it. He just printed it out and turned it in. It might have been the easiest case of getting caught cheating of all time.
Moron.
Yes.
All right, I don't have time for the fake rifle news. We'll get to that tomorrow. That'll be shoved off. Like Jamie Burke. We got to go. The Hot 5 at 5 is coming up next. The NFL schedule release, big night for the Blazers, and the Packers sign a quarterback next on The Fan.